This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Yeah, buddy, it's hour number three of the G-Back Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a great day. Thanks for making us part of it. Joining us now, Ted Wynn from The Athletic, talking NFL, coming out of week eight, going to week nine now, Ted. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on your home of the Cowboys. How you doing?
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Man, when you watched the Cowboys Sunday night, did you see a team that can still get it together? Like Jerry Jones is selling, or did you see an inexperienced developing team like what Mike McCarthy's saying?
I think I see a team that is lacking talent. I mean, like they need somebody to throw to outside of CeeDee Lamb, and they're trying to find that guy. I mean, Turpin got way more targets than he would on any other team in that game. And defensively, they're just kind of handcuffed because of how weak they are against the run. And I think Mike Zimmer, you know, he tried to play a lot of man coverage against the Niners. The Niners are a team that struggled against man coming into the game, but they had a good game plan for all the man coverage that the Cowboys tried to play. They played man on 50% of snaps, but the looks were just too static and just too easy to beat. I mean, you know, in the first Niners drive, I think it was third and six, they had no receivers on the field. They had Deebo Samuel line up at running back, and the Cowboys had their nickel personnel, which meant a linebacker would be covering Deebo man-to-man, and it's just like things like that you just can't have happen.
So it's a team short on talent, and the coaches aren't helping them. That sounds great.
Exactly. Not a great situation right now.
Well, we have a tremendous amount of respect for Mike Zimmer here, as a lot of people do. But one of the thoughts that, you know, has been presented is he old? Has the game passed him by? Or do you think he just doesn't have the tools to implement what he can do?
I mean, I was pretty excited about Mike Zimmer coming back in the NFL. I was always a big fan of all the pressure schemes, the things he did with Minnesota. And right now, all the simulated pressures, creepers, and those things are kind of like the hot scheme in NFL. So I thought he would come in and fit right in. But I think right now, because they're so weak against the run, they can't run what he likes to do. He likes to run a lot too high. He likes to play a lot of quarters coverage and you know, rotate safeties and that sort of deal. But right now they have to keep an eighth man in a box or else they're going to get gas in the run. They still get gas in the run with eight man sometimes. But it just really limits the menu for what Mike Zimmer wants to do. And I don't think this is a defense that he wants to run. And he just, again, the toolbox with what they're hamstrung to do, it's very limited. But at the same time, there are things that they can do to help the players. And I just don't think it's happening on the field right now.
So the injuries certainly a big reason for that. You pointed that out. But are the bigger overarching problems, do you think, on the offensive side or the defensive side?
I think both. I mean, offensively, you know, Jake Ferguson's supposed to be the Robin to CeeDee Lamb if he's Batman, and they just haven't been able to get the ball to Jake Ferguson downfield. A lot of his targets are just kind of in the flats, and he does a good job of running after the catch. But last year, when they were at the best, Jake Ferguson was, you know, the guy you could trust running down the seam. And when you look at the play design, like sometimes CeeDee Lamb and Jake Ferguson are just kind of in the same spot, and then they're kind of easy to double. I think they have to find a way to take advantage of both their talents. Like if CeeDee's going deep, you know, Jake Ferguson has to be working a one-on-one on a choice route or something on the other side. And I think they really need another deep threat right now. And like I mentioned, Turpin, I think they're trying to get Turpin to be that guy, to be the deep threat opposite of CeeDee, but they just haven't found that other guy that could take the top off the defense when the safety's shading towards CeeDee Lamb right now. So, I mean, I think if you look at the offseason, some of these problems are predictable. Like, I think most people would agree that the Cowboys should have went to look for another threat opposite of CeeDee, and it's kind of predictable what's happening on offense right now. And most people thought the Cowboys should have got stronger against the run up front, and they didn't. And right now they're kind of paying for it.
Ted, I'm fascinated by these teams now. When you look at all the metrics and stuff, and one of them is about the condensed offenses and the ones that play with width. And the Cowboys play with the most width of any other team in the National Football League. Is that something that is hurting them, playing that wide, as opposed to the teams that we see that have success that have been playing more condensed?
Yeah, I think if you're playing more wide, then you need guys to really win outside. And CeeDee Lamb is that the guy that could win outside. But they don't have another guy that can do that. And, you know, again, that's why you're seeing Turpin and Tolbert get these fade routes on opposite side. You need those outside guys if you're going to play the spread style. Because when you're playing condensed, you're helping them out with the shorter splits. You're helping them helping out receivers with traffic. You're helping them out with those type of plays. But when you're outside, you're isolating these guys and saying, you got to win. But they don't have those guys that could win right now.
We're talking with Ted Wynn of The Athletic. And, Ted, you watch all the film. You study all these teams. When you whoever you consider to be the best play caller or play callers in the league, how big of a gap is there from Mike McCarthy and what you're seeing him deploy offensively for the Cowboys and the teams that are doing it the best?
I mean, I was pretty encouraged with what Mike McCarthy was doing last season when Dak was putting all those efficiency numbers up. But this season, like you said, I feel like offensively and defensively, they've just been sort of static. So, I mean, I would say Mike McCarthy's probably, if I had to rank all the play callers in tiers, he'd probably be kind of in the middle tier. You know, I don't think he's helping this offense as much as he can with scheme, but at the same time, like, there's still sound concepts, and I don't know if he's doing anything necessary to hurt the players. Like I mentioned, they're kind of just limited by what they have roster wise.
Ted Wynn of The Athletic with us. What if you could replace Mike and Brian Schottenheimer with the best possible coaches with an optimized game plan? How much better could the results be?
I think, you know, to me, Ben Johnson's probably the top play caller in the league right now. So, I don't think the run game has ever been Mike McCarthy's strength. He's always been a West Coast, very high pass rate type of guy. And obviously having a run game in this modern era right now to help this team, especially with the limited pass catching talent, could help immensely. I know that the running backs aren't amazing, but I think if you have a coach that's really good at scheming up the run game, it at least gives them something that they could hang their hat on. And right now it's just too much on Dak's shoulders. So I don't know how high the ceiling could be, but I would think they'd be a above average team at least, because you do have a superstar in CD. And I think Jake Ferguson's a good second target. I think there's ways around, you know, that you could scheme that kind of takes advantage of both these guys' talent. And I don't know if the ceiling is a top 10 of offense, but maybe they could get in that 12th, 13th range, hypothetically.
Hey, Ted, it's kind of looking at the division, the Commanders, and it looks like Cliff Kingsbury has kind of found himself with his play calling. What has been the biggest difference with him? Is it simply that he's found somewhat of a running game now to be paired with his concepts, or is it something different that you're noticing on tape that's given him an advantage?
I think with Cliff Kingsbury, he's always had a very good run game. Even in Arizona, he's always been very good at scheming up the quarterback run game. But the problem is his offense has kind of sputtered out the second half of the season. What he does is pretty simple, because they play with a ton of tempo, and when you play with a ton of tempo, you're not going to, you know, have a ton of motion shift and a ton of different concepts. So what they're doing is relatively simple. They're not asking a ton from Jaden Daniels, but what they're doing, they're executing at a very high level, and obviously Jaden is playing at a very high level as well. So I'm interested to see if this kind of tapers off, because Kingsbury has put up similar numbers with Arizona early in the year. And then later in the year, for whatever reason, maybe teams just start kind of catching up to the simplicity of the offense. Maybe they start catching up to the hand signals and everything that they use with tempo. But they start tapering off the second half of the season. So there are definitely things that he's doing better this year, this time around. But I'm interested to see if he can continue evolving and kind of avoid that second half taper off that we've seen from him in the past.
one of the big offensive coordinator names from last year, Bobby Slowik. Have teams caught up to him and what he wants to do there with C.J. Stroud in Houston?
Yeah, I mean, I think last year he made a name for himself because the Texans offense was so bad the year before that, you know, raising that level of play to a certain level got him some notoriety. A lot of that had to do with C.J. Stroud and just how lights out. I mean, he had one of the best rookie seasons of all time, but there was still some criticism of his offense. Like, he would, you know, be in love with that run pass sequence, even though the Texans were just such a bad team running the ball. And then C.J. Stroud would kind of get them out of a bad situation on third down. And that's kind of happening this year too, but it's becoming harder because the Texans offensive line might be even worse than they were last year. They just lost Stephon Diggs, and Nico Collins has missed games. So, you know, I think last year he did get a little bit of hype just because of the big improvement and C.J. Stroud playing so well. But this year we're seeing some of those problems that he had last year, and they're being magnified because the expectations are higher.
What are you seeing from the Eagles offense? They're off maybe their best performance. It was the Bengals defense, though, so you have to kind of have the asterisk on it a little bit. But what are you seeing from Hurts, Kellen Moore, and this Eagles offense?
Yeah, I think Kellen Moore is making some smart adjustments, and he is adding some creativity that they desperately needed last season. And I think the big adjustment he's made is Jalen Hurts just doesn't look as explosive as he once was. And the league has kind of cracked down on these RPO rules and illegal man downfield, and that was such a big part of the Eagles' offense during their Super Bowl year. So I think he's adjusted by going away from the quarterback option game. They're running Saquon Barkley from under center more. And when you add Saquon Barkley and the Eagles offensive line, which is one of the best in the league, and you're running him downhill, you're going to get some production. And when they do run Jalen Hurts, they're running him more on like quarterback draws, or they're just having him just run the ball directly from just taking the snap and running without an option. And what that allows him to do is it gives him a bit of a runway. So instead of standing still and reading the defense and then pulling the ball and having to build up your speed from just a standstill, he's able to kind of build his speed towards the line of scrimmage and run. I think that's a really smart adjustment. So what they've done is they're kind of separating their run quarterback and running back run game, and it's paying dividends.
How about the Falcons? They're next on deck here for the Cowboys. What have you seen from Kirk Cousins in that offense?
Yeah, I think Kirk's playing at a very high level. I think his mobility is getting a little bit better. It's never going to be, you know, he's not going to be a Jaden Daniels or anything, but he's at least being able to, you know, get out there in the stretch plays and then, you know, run a little bit of a boot or move a little bit in the pocket. And he's just getting more comfortable in his offense than some of the top tier talent that we've seen on this Atlanta team that is getting wasted. Now they're all of a sudden getting the ball. Drake London looks like a very good receiver. Kyle Pitts is starting to fulfill his fantasy promise that a fantasy drafter has been hoping for years. And Bijan Robinson's making plays. This is a very talented offense. They just needed competent play from the quarterback. And I think Kirk wasn't quite ready in the beginning of the season, but he's starting to look healthier, and he's looking very comfortable in this offense.
It's Ted Wynn of The Athletic. All right, Ted, we're out of here. Thank you so much. Enjoy week 9.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Salute. A must read, I think. A must follow. You know, Ted Wynn, great journalist, great film guy, knows all the answers to your football questions, and that's why we wanted to get him on the show. The last Flagtober stop of the year is tomorrow. Whataburger off 161 in Grand Prairie. That's 2630 161 right in front of the Walmart Supercenter. Stinks coming up at 440. We'll talk with Mark Schlereth. But top 10 at 420 is next. Wooly Bully, what's in store?
Let's do it. The top 10 worst plays in the history of the National Football League. That's next.
Hey, buddies. Welcome back. It's time for Woolchuck's top 10 at 420. Is anybody else getting like strong Milli Vanilli nostalgia watching Trayvon Diggs outside the locker room with the hair? Could you just see him up there in the suits doing the sideways shuffle dance, blame it on the rain? Brian, you know what I'm talking about. Milli Vanilli?
Yeah, absolutely.
Taller gentleman?
Oh, no. Yeah, I see what you're talking. Was it? Yeah, what was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that guy was awesome.
I used to remember their names. That what are the...
one was Millie.
Rob and somebody else, wasn't it?
Yeah, Rob and...
Fab.
Fab. I'm Rob. Fab. He's Fab. Fab. Yeah, we're Milli Vanilli. Yeah.
Rob and Fab.
Lucius, did you ever see the episode, and maybe you did, Dawson, Behind the Music?
I sure did.
Remember they had all those that I used to love. I can't believe they got rid of those. They were kind of like little documentaries.
Yeah, they're good.
But they were called, it was called.
If you got it behind the music, it's going to be sad, though, at some point.
Yeah, but it was. But
then the record label started calling.
Yeah. And then their own manager let them down. Yeah, it was. But that Behind the Music was actually really, really entertaining.
They pulled it off.
They did. They won a Grammy. I think 1989, I think, is when they won it. Yeah.
Shook did the tape world. Stick or something like that?
They were performing. They were performing live on a television show.
Was it Saturday Night Live?
No, that was a Simpson sister.
Yeah,
Milli Vanilli.
That was Jessica Simpson's sister. Did it on Saturday Night Live. She started doing a little boot scooting.
Yeah,
when the things started messing up.
Was it Letterman?
An MTV concert.
Was it an MTV concert? And it hung.
Blame it on the rain.
Rain. Yeah. Oops. Yeah. And then they ran off. They just ran off.
That's not good.
And man, like everybody basically of their managing team and all that, like they just turned their back on him.
The
just,
skipping CD got him.
Yeah.
You know, should have stayed with the cassette, but it was 89. CD, then hot new tech.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
They would have went to tape. They had that hiss on their voice.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. But if you don't know what we're talking about, Milli Vanilli, an incredible story.
They were big on MTV.
They owned the summer of 88 or 89 or something. They were massive. Yeah. And then they were gone in embarrassment. And that's what I thought of when I saw Trayvon Diggs there outside of the locker room just a few moments ago. ESPN still reliving it?
Maybe that'll be his Halloween get up.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's ready to bust that out.
Be a good look.
Yeah.
Just get the suit. I think it's a purple suit there with the shoulder pads from the 80s. Yeah, you'll be good to go.
You got the button up, the white button up shirt, and then with the big, with the shoulder pads. Yeah.
Segment here brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured due to somebody's negligence, call the Frankels and get a free consultation. 214 or 817-333-3333. Hit frankelfirm.com. Here's Zach with an H. Your Wooly Loly.
Thank you very much. The top 10 words. Plays in NFL history. I did find this like a pretty interesting topic. Matt Miller just put this out in regards to Anthony Richardson
getting
benched. Scouts and agents are telling college quarterbacks to not leave school until they've started two or more years. The NFL doesn't truly develop quarterbacks anymore outside of rare exceptions. And we have talked in recent years about
stay
like that
COVID year.
Stay in
there and get that NIL money.
You can get plenty of cash.
Yeah.
And you want to pile up as much college money as you can before you get that guaranteed rookie deal, because that might be your last NFL bag if you're bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stay around, transfer a bunch of times, try to get $5-10 million a year to be a college quarterback, and then go.
Yeah, it worked out for Jaden Daniels in a big way. And
it's about to work out for Cam Ward.
About to say, for Cam Ward, it seems like it's about to work out that way for sure. And then
Michael Penix.
Penix. Great call. So
anybody in recent years.
Anybody that's gone to Oregon?
Dylan Gabriel.
They're lining up. Bo Nix was terrible at Auburn.
Yeah,
he went to Oregon.
Well, and he's still terrible.
He didn't have a good game, but
finding ways to win games, man.
They won five games, haven't they?
They have. They're 5-3.
Is it 5? Yeah.
They're 5-3. And he did play well against Carolina, but it is Carolina.
They're win games in spite of their offense. Mm. It's pretty incredible.
They are good on defense.
Oh, fantastic. All right, let's get to the top 10 worst plays in NFL history. We do have the 972 worst plays, definitely. Cowboys, Zeke at center. Goes to Dak, gets flattened.
That was
an embarrassing moment.
Very, very embarrassing. I think we're all glad that that wasn't the final play of Zeke's career in a Cowboys uniform.
No. Yeah. I'm really happy that that wasn't.
Would they call that a comedy of errors?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a bad play.
Be a forever football folly. But we're doing this because last night the Giants gave us one of the worst plays in football history where nobody blocked the one person.
What was crazy?
2-point conversion.
They just let him run right through. It's like the blockers out there weren't even ready.
It was terrible.
It's like snap, and then they just were standing around.
It was like they were doing a bit. Yeah. Like if this was like a football comedy movie or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, that you would see that like a scene in the Replacements.
Awful play.
Terrible when things play. Start to go bad for a team and you need to fire the coach and you don't, that's the kind of crap that happens. It's coming for the Cowboys if it hasn't already.
Well, yeah, that's true. We do have some other texts that came in. Certainly last night was one, but butt fumble.
How about Romo's drop snap?
Yeah, that might be one that makes an appearance here.
The Cowboys?
That might be one that makes an appearance.
Gosh.
Honorable mention already is the taunting from Tyreek Stevenson that resulted in the Hail Mary. That was not a good move. That was a bad play.
From the weekend.
Yeah. It was incidental, Walchuk.
What about...
it's funny because Eberflus came out and said, like, yeah, the guy who caught the touchdown, Noah Brown, that was Stevenson's guy.
Yeah. But Stevenson made a play on the ball.
Right.
He was still in position. He hit the ball.
I think maybe
so
you're
if
right.
He's there, he stays home and shields the guy.
Exactly. Yeah, you put a body on a body.
Covering Noah Brown. It's
like, my guy's not going to get the ball. There's five different hands that are flying up in this pile here. I think the coaching point is you don't play the ball there and you just play the man.
What happened is, if you watch it, and we had it on earlier, he comes from he's late to the play as it's kind of everybody's trying to mark guys. And what happens is he comes flying from the left side.
Yeah.
So he gets in front of everybody that's going up.
Oh.
So he's the first guy to tip the ball. And maybe if the ball gets to the masses, they're going to knock that thing down.
Odds are that's probably
what happened. But he scrambles from the far left and knifes in there. And now he's first guy in and then gets the ball tipped up instead of to the pack, which is everybody's taught to knock it down.
Noah Brown's just left uncovered
because
that was his responsibility. Yeah. Now he's just there. And the ball, it was perfect just the way it happened.
He ran to try and make a play, and in fact, by being late there, he probably messed it up even more.
The more you describe it, the more I feel like this should be in the top 10.
It might end up being
not
in the top 10
outside looking
over the time.
They said the cover-up is worse than the crime.
Yeah.
It was really bad. Yeah, Leon Lett. Oh, my gosh. Thanksgiving play. That was rough. I mean, you go with two, the fumble as well.
Well, the Super Bowl one was... Hay was in the barn.
It didn't actually matter. But that's the one I think of first.
Most points in a Super Bowl ever?
Yeah.
I would take that record.
Yeah.
Miracle at the Meadowlands comes in at number 10.
That would hurt. That's Herm Edwards, right? Yeah, Joe Pisarcik is quarterback, and he fumbles. Yeah.
Man, he juggled. He fumbles the snap. Next thing you know, here's Herm Edwards. I'm going to catch it in midair. Runs for a touchdown. Eagles beat the Giants when it looked like that game was over.
He played to win the game.
Number 9, this is... hilarious. Remember the lateral that I think it was...
was it the Dolphins, New England?
Saints had against Jacksonville.
Oh.
In Jacksonville.
Yes.
Saints score on it. It's the last play of the game. They're lateraling back and forth. They score.
Right.
And then they miss...
The extra point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brutal.
I mean, can you believe that? You never see that happen, and then they finally get a touchdown, and then your damn kicker comes out and misses the extra point.
Is that Carney or something like that? Was it John Carney miss?
Sounds like a Carney thing.
Yeah, John Carney, maybe.
8 was the Malcolm Butler interception. I think this is more so like on the Patriots.
Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, or on the Seahawks for just not running the damn ball.
Right.
Brett Maher missing 4 extra points in a row should be on this list.
Yeah, that was brutal.
Jeez, yeah, that was an all-time yip.
7 is DeSean Jackson's drop Monday Night Football against the Cowboys, where he's got a touchdown.
Oh, and before he goes across the end zone,
flings it at the 1-yard line, and it ends up not being a touchdown. Cowboys
I thought he would be on this for the punt return he had against the Giants. Tom Coughlin said,
"Yeah, the walk off."
Said, "Don't kick it to him." And the guy punted it right.
That's another good one.
Was that Feagles?
It might have been.
Yeah,
it might have
right.
been Jeff Feagles. That might have been.
8 is the Romo. Failed extra point.
Okay. Seattle playoffs.
It was a waxy ball.
It was. It was a slick ball, and we got screwed.
Yeah. They needed a K-ball.
That was the end of Bill Parcells.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Parcells should have gone on a J.J. Redick-like rant about
Bill.
The ball.
He should have. Like, what are we doing using slick balls here?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Mm. 5 is the Blair Walsh miss. Field goal, 27-yarder.
Seattle, Minnesota.
Yeah, he misses the 27-yarder to advance them.
It was like 0 degrees, though.
It's freezing. That was played at the Gopher Stadium.
It was. The Minnesota Golden Gopher Stadium.
SGP.
4, yeah. The Gopher Bowl. 4 is Dan Orlovsky running out of bounds for his safety.
Yes.
Hold that L, Dan.
Oh, my gosh. That's brutal.
Yeah, 972 is like, who's the quarterback who's only famous for stepping out of the back of the end zone in the 972? Yeah, that'd be Orlovsky.
Having bad Dak takes, caping for Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
He's a disaster.
Carson Wentz, that's on his resume, too. Top 3 worst plays in NFL history.
It's kind of a cut, dude. Hit hard if you had a little bit of bass in the late 80s.
Number 3, Jim Marshall.
We were clubbing in this stuff.
Jim Marshall running.
Jim Marshall ran the wrong way against the 49ers.
Bro. Yes, he did.
That could be one, but the top two are pretty funny, but this is brutal.
This
goes the opposite way for, like, runs in the end zone.
He's a Hall of Fame player.
He is. Okay.
Jim Marshall, yeah.
Two is the Colts fake punt.
Oh, yes.
Like, they line against New England, they line up, and it's just the punter under the center. No other offensive lineman. They're trying to, like, spread him out wide.
That wasn't McAfee, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah,
McAfee.
No, McAfee described this play. He had, like, a whole segment on his show before his show was maybe at ESPN or whatever.
McAfee might have been the guy that snapped
it. I think McAfee was a part of this play because he has a whole breakdown of it. Yeah, he's the punter on the play. He's the punter on the play. And
they have an actual player under center here, but who I think the punter might be. McAfee might be the center, which is even
more number one.
I think I see him as the punter on the play.
That's crazy.
It just nothing worked. The Patriots were
they immediately,
like,
just
laughing.
Tackled him. Like, they jumped over and it was over.
It was similar to what the 2-point conversion attempt was for last night.
Like, what are we doing here?
The play ended as soon as it started.
As soon as it snapped, it was over.
Number one, though.
No, no wonder this back dude can't tackle. Thinking about love.
The butt fumble.
Butt number one?
Fumble. Yeah.
Butt fumble number one. It is. And it's a play that forever, if you're down in the dumps, you can turn on the butt fumble and you can get yourself a happy chuckle.
Yeah, because he runs into not only his own offensive lineman's rear end, but his offensive lineman is in a stalemate with Vince Wilfork. So he's basically running into like 800 pounds worth of offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And so, of course, his body does what any normal human being's body would do, which is immediately go to the ground and lose,
like,
the ball.
Slides.
Repulsed.
It's bizarre how he ends up being on his backwards here, too.
Yeah. How did he not have a concussion? Like, seriously, if this is Tua, this is a KO.
Yeah.
Because it was the Mark Sanchez face right into the rear end of his own offensive lineman, who is, again, in a stalemate with Vince Wilfork. That's 800 pounds. And then his head is what hits first.
Yeah. It's like a convertible running into the back of an 18-wheeler.
Yeah, it's an incredible play. 817, the last year, the Khalil Mack Raiders deal where they go ahead and against New England. They run the reverse. Khalil Mack, I think, intercepts it, returns it for a touchdown. That was a crazy play, too. Absolutely.
Yes, you know it's true. Thank you, Wolchuk.
How was it not obvious these German dudes showed up like, yeah, and then they started singing and they were rapping and everything?
Yeah, we have really good singing voices. Just wait. Close eyes.
We were just looking for something. We were tired of one-hit wonders.
Yes.
We were looking
and hair
for
metal.
Yeah.
We needed something else.
Okay,
we'll coming up next, Mark Schlereth will join us. Stink will be in the house with you next. We're talking football, brought to you by Mayonnaise, next here in the G-Bag Nation. Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. We're joined now by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. And a good afternoon to you, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, we're doing all right as well. I mean, I think better than some of the Cowboys players. Third week in a row, they're getting frustrated. I mean, I guess one was the owner, one was the coach, and then Trayvon Diggs Sunday night. What do you think about a team lashing out at reporters here after losses?
Well, it goes to show you the frustration within the complex, within the team, and two, the lack of maturity. I mean, that it's one of those things where I understand frustration. I get frustration, but the point is that ultimately you got to go out and perform. You got to go out and work. And if you're not performing and you're not winning, you're open to criticism. So, you know, I mean, here's my theory was always this as a player. There is nothing you can say about me. There is nothing you can talk about in regards to my game that I'm not going to be 10 times harder. I'm not going to be a way bigger critic of myself than you could ever be. And the only time that you get, you know, your panties in a wad is when people say things about you and it's true and you don't like it. So that's been my experience playing, you know, 12 years in the league. That was just kind of how I felt about it. By the way, I've got Tennessee this weekend, and I don't know if you guys know this, but they've got a good little back named Pollard. You probably never heard of him.
Yeah, he's not bad. He's
actually playing, you know, on a bad team, but he's playing pretty well. He's a good little run blocker, good little running back, really explosive. Yeah, you guys, I mean, obviously you guys couldn't afford getting backs this year because, you know, Jerry Jones has said so, but I just keep looking at it going, boy, he'd look good in a Dallas Cowboy uniform, but, you know.
Well, yeah, and then when he was here, 4 out of the 5 years, couldn't get him on the field because, you know, you had the great Ezekiel Elliott who needed the majority of the carries, and I guess we're still dealing with that.
Yeah, right, exactly. Anyhow, I don't mean to poke fun, but I was like, damn, like, how'd this guy end up not being part of that team? So anyhow, whatever. I digress.
It is frustrating, and, you know, I thought there for a minute, Mark, when the Cowboys came out with just over 3 minutes to go, they'd figured something out, and we were about to see the game-winning drive. What were you thinking right before those four straight incompletions that tragically ended the game?
Yeah, same thing. And the other thing I always look at is, like, you know, what are you doing? Like, obviously, what's working and stuff, but, like, I get so many teams to just get into this, almost this panic, we got to throw it every down. And a lot of the times when you're in those situations, I know they don't run it well, but when you're in those situations, the best fronts, the lightest boxes, and the best matchup you're going to get to pop a run is in those situations where everybody and their brother's uncle knows you're going to throw it. And again, that comes down to coaching. And, you know, it's funny because I've got Tennessee, as I mentioned, so I'm watching the Detroit film. And the amount of times they get teams in second and long and third and long, and they'll run a trap, they'll just run a standard zone, you know, just a standard tight zone or whatever. And or they'll run a inside trap or a wham, or and they'll split that crease, that defense, and it's amazing how many times they'll get 15 yards on a second down and 7 when everybody's opening their hips to bail to get to their drop spots. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, we get so we've normalized, we got to do this on this down, we've got to do this on this down. And sometimes, you know, from a play calling standpoint, a little change up in the way you do things, where you're going to get the most favorable look as an offense. And, you know, I was also thinking about that. Do you have anything, you know, that you go to that would get people off of what you're doing?
Stink, you had, it was Cardinals and Dolphins this past weekend, I believe. And you talk about the rushing attack, like Mike McDaniel and what he does. He's one of our favorite coaches when it comes to just the interview aspect of it. How is it getting to pick his brain during the week, and what did you think of that game?
Well, it was great to pick his brain, and, you know, he was my ball boy when I played in Denver.
So, oh, that's right.
Yeah, so I've known that guy since he was 14 or whatever. But, yeah, it's fun to have a conversation with him because of the way, you know, he was brought up in this league and the way he learned in this league, you know, through Mike Shanahan and that system and, you know, and some of the things that they do to attack the edge and use their speed to their advantage. But it was a really, really cool experience, you know, to sit down with Tua and see Tua in his first game back and, you know, to see kind of just the way he processed coming back and then how well he played. And he played exceptionally well. And I thought there may be rust, and there was no rust in his passing game. The only place that there was a little bit of rust is taking the snap, both in shotgun and under center. He had a fumble. He had one fumble that led to a safety, which ended up costing him the game. So just really, it was really interesting. Ball security, because you haven't been in the pocket, because you haven't been operating that way. The throws and the operation from the throwing standpoint and getting the ball on receivers with an opportunity to run, none of that suffered at all. He looked like a well-oiled machine. It was just, you know, some of the other things that that ended up costing Miami that game, but a great comeback and a great play, just a really good game, really fun game to call.
Insider Calls here with Mark Schlereth, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Mark, what's the most tired you ever were in a game, and did you ever get close to asking out?
Yeah, No, I never got close to asking out. We had a couple of 18, 19 play drives over the course of my career where it's exhausting. As a matter of fact, I had an 18 play drive. I think it was an 18, might have been 19 play game or drive against the Giants in 1991. And in the midst of that drive, somewhere in the middle of that drive, I broke the end of my thumb. So not only did I have to go 18 plays, but I had to do it with a broken thumb, and did not ask out of that drive or any play of that game. So that is the craziest thing I have ever heard. Like, you're a quarterback, dude. I don't care how tired you are. You don't opt out of a game. You can't. Unless you're hurt, you don't get to come out. Now, I understand receivers rotate. You know, they run 160 yards or whatever, and they come off the sideline, and somebody else rotates in for them, and I get that. But you don't opt out as a quarterback. It's the lie. That dude needs it. Like, we all want our athletes to tell us the truth until they actually tell us the truth. Then we'd like them to lie. That's one where I'd like to get a lie, because that was the most ridiculous thing. I would just off that answer alone, I'd had to bench him. Just like, yeah, you're not bright enough to play the quarterback right at this particular juncture of your career. You right now, we're going to have to sit you down. You're going to have to learn how to speak the language before we actually let you go back out and play.
Was that more offensive than the Tyreek Stevenson Bears defender there on the Hail Mary, taunting the crowd mid-play and then being the one that causes the ball to deflect into the arms of the receiver?
Right, when you're supposed to be playing backstop there and you're supposed to body up that guy like a rebounder. Yeah, that was egregious. And as egregious as that was, it was not nearly as egregious as giving the ball to a guard goal line. Like, seriously. Yeah. So I sit there and think, one, his hands are all taped up. He's got gloves. Like, I had the number of rolls of tape I had on my hands and my fingers while I was a player. And then the wrist guards, my hands were like in casts. They were freaking weapons. They shouldn't have been illegal. Like, they should have been illegal. They shouldn't have been legal to play with my hands that taped up. And I'm like, you can't be serious. You cannot give. Like, at some point, you practiced that and said, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, how can you be that dumb? Like, even Anthony Richardson looked at that and go, wow, those guys are really stupid. So, like, that one is. That was mind-boggling. That's a fireable offense, too, as far as I'm concerned. You can't be that stupid.
Mark, thank you so much for your time and your insights, buddy. Enjoy week 9. We'll catch up with you next Tuesday.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Cheers. Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious.
Oh, that was great, man. That was great.
That ball did immediately come out.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as he just handed, Williams handed, that ball just went right into the line.
It's the perfect transition, because I think in football's finest, we'll address Bears fans, and I think that's no one is sadder. Even the Giants fans aren't as sad as what the Bears fans are today, and I'll explain why next.